welcome to Thank the Maker, a podcast about heroes, princesses, scoundrels, hokey religions, ancient weapons, and all things Star Wars. I'm your host, Adam Russell.
My name's Nick. Ryan was injured in a lightsaber duel, and he couldn't make it this week.
He died in a tragic gasoline fight accident after having an orange mocha frappuccino.
Either that or the lightsaber accident. You decide.
Either way is fine.
He ignited a lightsaber
near a group of male models having a gasoline fight
while he was getting gas for his car.
It happens all the time, you know. People just don't talk about it enough. I think that's just sad. Today we are joined by a special guest. We're talking about, among other things, something that came out today at the time of this recording. Our guest is author Amy Ratcliffe. Hello.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks for doing it.
Thanks for being here.
Very excited. I've been a fan and a reader of a couple of your books, so it'll be cool to get to know you a little bit and go over those books and hopefully turn on some of our fans to some of your writings.
Yeah.
I love it. And I mostly know you just from Twitter, Nick.
Yeah.
So it's exciting to see your face.
I'm famous on Twitter. Also known as I'm on Twitter.
Amy has written quite a bit of stuff for Star Wars, including a few books, quite a bit for Star Wars Insider, the official Star Wars magazine, StarWars.com, and you're all up in the universe. So many cool things.
I really like Star Wars a little bit.
So do we. It's weird.
What a coincidence.
Yeah.
Formerly, you podcasted yourself, right? The ultimate sign.
Yeah, I had a couple of Star Wars podcasts.
So let's do Stolen Plans.
Yeah.
We'll give kind of your credits and we'll end it with the book that drops today and we'll talk about that.
What have you done with those plans?
Amy Ratcliffe, author, writer, blogger also?
I'd say blogger.
Yeah.
Definitely started that way. So yeah.
Like I said, Star Wars Insider, a dozen or so bits in Star Wars Insider magazine, a bunch on StarWars.com. She also wrote, I say she, like you're not just looking at me right now, but you are.
Right.
A book called Star Wars Women of the Galaxy, Star Wars Jedi Mind, Peace, Knowledge, Harmony, and Other Lessons of the Force.
Such a long title.
It's a lot of words, and it's so good. Which is kind of about mindfulness is it kind of an all ages book, or is it meant for younger folks?
Definitely all ages.
Yeah. I browsed it a bit, and it's awesome.
I hope it's all ages, because I read it, and I love it.
Also, a short story called Heroes of the Rebellion from a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, 40th anniversary collection of short stories, which is so cool and has added so much and filled in so many blanks. I'm just obsessed with it. I'm so glad that they did this. It's amazing. And your story, we'll talk about it briefly, but I haven't read it, but from what I've read of it, it's definitely a unique idea. I don't know. It's just really interesting and cool. So we'll talk about that. There's a book called Ellie and Me, which is a children's book, Galaxy's Edge children's book. And today, at the time of this recording, the release of The Art of Star Wars, Galaxy's Edge has happened.
Yay, it's finally here. It's real.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is a release day for you? I was thinking about this while I was driving today, because a release day for a record or whatever is just like, I'll sit on Twitter and Instagram and like see what people think. Are you doing kind of the same thing, seeing like feedback come in?
Yeah. And it's always in the past I've had, you know, release days, and I'm always like, you just get caught up on like, people are really kind on Twitter and maybe they've got their books and they're sharing pictures. They're tagging you on Instagram. And I'm always like, I should really take the day off work because I have a 9-to-5. And then I just get very distracted all day. And I never remember that when the release day rolls around.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, today was perhaps not my most productive day at Nerdist, but I do, because I'm like, oh, what are people saying? I won't read reviews because I can't go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Because I like myself and I,
yep,
most of the time, and I don't want to change that. So,
yeah.
But it is fun to see people like get their copies of the books, and sometimes they like share memories, or like with my past books, they're like, this is me reading it to my kid and my kid really likes it. And it's like, you're doing that on the first day. It's very sweet.
So sweet. So you write for Nerdist as well?
Yeah, I'm a managing editor for Nerdist. I've been with them for a while.
So you are a busy person.
Yes. But people are like, do you sleep? And I'm like, I definitely sleep. I definitely rest. I've played so many hours of Stardew Valley recently that looks like that's all I do all day.
It's good.
But yeah, I always try to have multiple things going.
Yeah.
So everything I've ever heard about writing a book is kind of like It's the most fulfilling thing that I could have chosen to do with my life, and I hate it. But I love it, but I hate it.
That is that.
So that while having a full-time job, being a managing editor at a largely successful, a very well-known and I'm sure very busy website, just like empire that Nerdist is, how do you make books happen with that?
Something I'm good at, which I don't usually, I'm like, I'm good at this thing. I'm good at boundaries.
Yeah.
So with my day job at Nerdist, which I love and I work with incredible folks, I'm very like, I am done at this time. I don't check Slack. I don't check email. I don't like try not to look at entertainment news when I'm not at work because it just will pull you in. You'd be like, oh, we should write that up. And I'm the only one available. Let's not. Because I always like to say like our jobs are valuable. We do cool stuff. We hopefully bring some joy into the world, but it's not urgent.
Yeah. Right.
At all, even a little. So that helps a lot. And then it's kind of just figuring out how I can trick my brain into like when it's like knowing when I'm the most creative. For a long time, I wrote best early in the morning. So I would get up, you know, at 5 or 6 a.m. before work. That's what I did with Women of the Galaxy and wrote a couple hours before work every day and like chipped away. And recently, though, in the past year, it's been, I don't write well. I work on Pacific hours on the East Coast. So it's like a weird like 11:30 to 7:30 schedule. This is very granular and I apologize.
No, this is so interesting to me.
I love it.
So I don't really like, I use the morning for like other things like meditating or doing Ring Fit. And then at 7:30 at night, I'm like, I just want to make dinner and have a whiskey and watch something and go to bed.
Yeah.
So now it's weekends, so I will just sit down and like treat weekends like a work day, but for writing. And we'll sit down 8 or 9 in the morning, put on some excellent scores, usually the same ones on repeat, because that's how I that's how I go in cycles, and write. And I try to write in hour-long sprints, take a 15-minute break, rinse and repeat until the book is done. And then you're like, at the end of it, you're like, am I done with this? I'm so tired of this book. I just want to be finished. And the whole way throughout, by the way, is just me complaining to my husband, like, I hate writing. Why did I choose this as a profession? And then when it's done, I'm like, but look, I made a book. Isn't it so great? And he's like, do you remember the time you cried?
Yeah.
Like,
it's a lot, definitely a lot of parallels. Cause I feel like, you know, the creative process has a lot of parallels to it. Cause obviously when you're talking now, I'm just like, yeah, I hate being in a band and I hate writing music, but also it's what I've dedicated my life to and I absolutely love it. So it's like, hey, I'm complex, all right? I love it and I hate it at the same time.
You got layers.
Yeah, yeah. But I really do feel like I'm so stubborn when it comes to myself and scheduling myself where like, I know that I need to stay on a schedule and be like, do this for an hour, do this for 30 minutes and you're fine. But I just won't do it because I'm stubborn. And I'm just like free flowing and stuff obviously slips through the cracks then. it's a weird life. I mean, Adam, you have a more of a scheduled job now, but like it's a weird life. I've been in music and in bands since I was 17. I've never really had a schedule. So I crave it, but I also, like I said, I'm stubborn and slightly lazy, so I just don't do it. But when I do it, it really works.
I am... God, I'm the worst. Amy, the schedule that you described, I've heard that before. I've read it on my attempts to fix my ADHD. I've read all about developing these habits and how to beat procrastination. I just cannot do it. I'm the worst. I'm so slow at getting started with something. And I don't know if it's just because it's built into me. I'm just was born as an ADHD type, or if it's because I did nothing but play music for a long time and I didn't have to develop those skills early as an adult. So even now going to work, clocking in, I'm always like running to clock it at the last second. And like Drew, producer Drew, who's on right now, like we used to work together. He saw me like just sprinting to the damn thing to clock in. And with editing here, especially like this podcast, I'm so slow in the morning and I'm like, oh God, I don't even want to get started. But when it's done, I'm like, I'll be texting these dudes with one eye open at the end of the night, like, guys, I love Star Wars. Yeah. I've been editing for so long, but I just love you guys and I love Star Wars. I'm so happy. It's the same thing. It's just...
But the during, you're like, oh, it's the worst.
Yeah. The sprints thing definitely does work, though.
Yeah.
I like those. And I'm a procrastinator, too. Like, not with Star Wars books. They're usually, like, due yesterday. But with another book, like, I've had a long lead time and like, yeah, I will wait till the last month. You need 30,000 words in a month. I did this to myself. I could have written it over a year.
Yeah.
So I get that. But I know that's how I work now, at least. And I'm like, okay, that's what it is.
There's just something about pressure that just brings out the best. Either
I have to do it.
Yeah. Either it's spontaneous and like you feel something in the moment and it just all like the floodgates open, or you need the pressure. There's no, okay, today I'm going to write the best thing I've ever written. Yeah. It doesn't work.
When you, when it comes to specifically Star Wars stuff, do you get approached to write something, or do you come up with an idea and like pitch it kind of?
So far, I have been approached, which has been wonderful. I know it can be tricky to have Lucasfilm approve ideas. Yeah. Like they have such a like full, I think, slate of ideas and publishing ideas they want to do that they generally, okay, we want like at least like a nonfiction here, maybe a fiction here. But I will say with Jedi Mind in particular, that did come from the editor that I worked with. I also worked with a Women of the Galaxy, and we really just wanted to work together again. Mm-hmm. So we did come up with that idea together, and he took it to Lucasfilm.
Oh, nice.
So I guess we kind of did propose an idea, and I completely forgot about it because my memory is like a sieve, and that was 2 years ago. But generally, they kind of, you know, I've been fortunate to work with them for Star Wars Insider and StarWars.com and just have a good relationship. So they'll come and be like, hey, do you want to write the Star Wars book? And pretty much the answer is always going to be, yeah, I want to. Yeah, of course, right? I want to write a Star Wars book. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Is there anything, I've thought about this for a long time. I especially thought about it when J.J. Abrams was announced as the director of the first new Star Wars film in however many years it was, where you love something so much that you're afraid that if you get too close to it, you'll kind of demystify, getting behind the curtain kind of puts you in a different place where your experience is different. Is it to that level with you, or are you still kind of on the fringes enough of the primary stories that nothing is sort of ruined or demystified?
I'll say with my writing work, I feel like I'm enough on the outside that I'm like, oh, I get like to dive into this world and dig into lore and bug Mad Martin with questions, but I'm not like in it.
Yeah.
I did, however, work for a brief time for Disney at Yellow Shoes as their Star Wars brand manager, where I basically, that's their in-house ad agency, and they were marketing for Galaxy's Edge, and they basically wanted an in-house Star Wars nerd to kind of liaison with Lucasfilm and Walt Disney Imagineering. And that was to like, I don't want to know, I hate this term and I'm sorry, but like, I don't want to know how the sausage is made to this degree. Like, and it was a project hire, so it kind of was built to be a certain amount of time. But that was like too much.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to be in it at this level. I would like to go back to writing books now. Okay, bye.
Yeah, I obviously, the example I made is like at the highest level of that. But I imagine J.J. Abrams having this conflict like, okay, do I do this and just completely get on the inside and demystify the whole thing for myself? Or do I just let some other ass bag do it and maybe mess it up, you know?
Yeah, then you're like, I didn't touch it.
Yeah, but then it's like, what if the other person that does it just totally blows it and you're like, God, I should have just done it, you know?
I could have done something really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely felt like that writing fiction for Star Wars when I wrote that short story, because that was really, I wrote a kid's picture book, not the same as a short story. And Empire's my favorite movie. And so it was a lot of, I'm like, oh, this could be really bad.
Yeah. So on that specifically, I had a question. You wrote the short story. How closely, in this case, this is, I mean, you're dealing directly with canon. So how closely do you work with Lucasfilm Story Group on something like that versus Jedi Mind? You're kind of interpreting things about the Force, but you're not, you pulled a lot of quotes and things, and it was really about interpreting those quotes for mindfulness. What's the kind of balance there? Pardon the pun.
No, that's a good, I'm sure I will make a Force pun at some point. So, no, that's a good distinction that you mentioned, because when I write, you know, nonfiction Star Wars, so to speak, versus fiction, like the notes I get are different. And almost in all cases, they go through whichever editor I'm working with. So depending on the publisher I work, I tend to work directly with an editor at the publisher who then kind of is the, send stuff off to Lucasfilm Story Group. And usually Lucasfilm PR, sometimes if it's nonfiction, who knows who else.
Yeah.
And so I get it back. When I get the document back, I see Story Group's notes on whatever it is. And with a short story, it was a lot of, you know, my particular story is set on Hoth, which means I had to be very careful about winding around everything we see on screen.
You're right.
And making sure like there was a lot of discussion. My character is like a propagandist, for example, and there were a lot of notes about would the rebellion really let her go to the secret base if yeah. it's super's top secret, and like to think about those kind of things. And also, like, with they'll double check, like, hey, like, I need a character here. I totally made up this name. If you want to use someone else, that's fine. And versus, like, on nonfiction, where it'll be, there's still some of, you know, kind of basic fact checking.
Yeah, yeah.
But largely, it's the comments are more, I guess, thematic or general versus this character. Like, I wrote a Han Solo line. Well, actually, my husband gave me the idea for it in the fiction story, which is great. And when you get a note, there's like, oh, this is perfect Han from Lucasfilm Publishing. Like,
that's dope.
Like, okay, that, I mean, I didn't write the line, but still but pretty still, cool.
Yeah.
Did you consider retiring after that?
that's it. I'm done. I should have.
You mentioned Matt. I skate with Matt all the time. We play hockey and hang. He's the best. I met him a couple of years ago.
He is so kind. And I'm going to gush about Matt Martin for a little bit because way back in 2012, I think it was at Celebration 6. Anyway, Matt is the one who got me hooked up with writing for StarWars.com because when used to be on that side of things at Lucasfilm, you know, now he's fancy creative executive. he's still really awesome. He helped me get my job at Disney too. But Matt's just always been really supportive and very cool and also lets me bug him with canon questions that don't, I'm like, I'm just going to DM you or email you instead of emailing the person who's then going to forward it to you.
Yeah. The last month or so I've gone up to Burbank to him and AJ and my girlfriend. We'll just skate and play hockey a little bit. And a couple of times during a pandemic, we had movie night in our other buddy's backyard, but it's good. Cause I don't want to be probably what he gets all the time from other people. Like, I almost to a fault don't ask him about Star Wars, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm just like,
I get that.
Yeah. I let him, if he wants to talk about something, he could talk about something, but I'm not going to ask a question that I know he's just going to be like, I can't talk about that. You know, like, I'm not going to be that type of person.
I think that's good.
Dude, even if I'm the kind of person, Nick, we've never really talked in detail. You don't care as much about spoilers, but I'm the kind of person where, if I did have a friend that was that much on the inside, I would almost just keep my distance for whatever time they were working on something important. Like,
I can't control myself.
The idea of actually getting a spoiler, I just don't. I'm so scared to ruin the experience, you know?
Yeah. I have a certain level that I'm okay with, you know? Like, there was one podcast that was pre-Rise of Skywalker that I was listening to that was getting some, whether they were real or not, they started to get a little like leaky, and I was just like, all right, I'm out. I don't want to know. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with knowing like a character is in it or not, but I don't want to know like plot and stuff like that. Yeah. No way.
Well, like, it's hard. The occasions, like for Women of the Galaxy, I wrote that before Solo, A Star Wars Story came out. So I had to wait till I saw the film to finish it. But 6 months before that, they gave me like a walkthrough, and they didn't tell me like the big ending or anything, but there was enough in there. I'm like, oh, I'm never going to talk about Solo until May because I don't want to accidentally say something I'm not supposed to.
Dude, so that's an example of like being on the inside that I, if given the opportunity, I don't think I could mess with. Like, even knowing the outline of a film, I don't think I could handle that.
The burden of knowledge, like how the Matt Martins and the mini, I mean, I know it's their job, but like having to carry so many secrets.
Yeah.
And also just, you know, it changes the experience. And that's kind of the biggest thing for me, at least.
You know what? I'm pretty quiet. I think I could do it. I think I could be the secret guy. I think I could keep secrets.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more in depth about your new book, which came out today, like we said. It's The Art of Galaxy's Edge. I haven't seen it yet because obviously it just came out. How much writing and what type of writing and what's the experience like as a writer do you do for essentially like a picture book with, I assume, some history and some backstory? What's it like?
Yeah, basically, it was stressful, first of all, because, you know, it's published by Abrams Books, the same folks that do the books for the films. It's designed to match the film books. And Phil Shostak, who works at Lucasfilm in the art department and is amazing, has wrote most of those. So I felt like, I'm like, oh, I have shoes to fill.
Yeah.
And it is that, like, as a writer, something I struggled with this book is I want to get into everything. So it was hard for me to rein back from like, okay, this is not a full making of book.
Yeah.
It's about the art, but I very like throughout. I was like, is there enough text in this? And my editor's like, you're fine. It's an art book. I'm like, but it feels like there should be more.
Yeah.
Which is why I conducted like somewhere between 20 and 25 interviews, 20 to 25 people, and like more interviews than that. Cause we talked a couple times. Cause I'm a reporter. I want all the information I can get my hands on. And I mean, I have all that. I use quite a bit, but of course there's obviously out of God knows how many pages of transcripts that I left behind. So it was the finding that balance of letting the art just shine. And there are like over 700 pieces of art in that book. So it doesn't need my words. It's the star. So it was trying to dig in and hopefully provide a little more context than just has already been out there, because a lot of press obviously happened when the lands both opened on each coast. And I didn't want to repeat that. There's going to be some overlap, but I tried to get new stories, new memories, and try to speak with everyone from like the gentleman who designed fonts for the land and made up, kind of a new font for Arabesh to make it look more fitting to, the bigger, like to the Doug Changs and Scott Trowbridges and Eric Tiemens. Oh my gosh, what a genius, about their influences and about, kind of the big picture of what Batu would look like. So it was complicated and I had to rein myself in quite a bit as I went. But I had a wonderful editor who's done a million of these books, so he helped me out a lot.
It is really interesting to think about that balance of not doing a full behind the scenes sort of story of how the place was made, but instead focusing on the art. But you do need a little bit of the behind the scenes because knowing the artist's motivation is so interesting. God, I'm like getting anxiety thinking about trying to rein it in myself because I'm always the kind of person, my first edit is four times longer than the whole thing's supposed to be, But it is so cool. Like the pictures, the art speaks for itself, but I love when Doug Chang or Phil Shostak or Ryan Church or any of those folks post on Instagram and just any caption, I'm like, ooh, what are they going to say about it? It's so exciting. I don't want to just see a picture. I do want to hear about their motivation and where they were coming from because we all know what George was influenced by. So to see what this generation is influenced by and what they're pulling from George and what and all the layers, it's just so cool.
I agree. And it was really such a treasure. Like I did Eric Timmons, his work is throughout the book. And he's a concept design supervisor at Lucasfilm. And just anytime we talked, which was a few times, I think, just gave me many art history lessons and to look at like, okay, I'm used to Star Wars, but I don't think about like Galaxy's Edge being influenced by 18th century Italian painters, for example.
Yeah.
So any time I could pull insight, because it was tricky, like I did overviews, then the book was put together. And then I went back and with interviews and did screen share. This was because it was all during pandemic times and being like, hey, like, here's an image, tell me about it. Slightly more finessed than that, but that was the gist. And I just could have done that for so like every page in the book.
Yeah.
If time would have permitted.
When you got what I'm assuming is a treasure trove of concept art. And at that point, you've been probably once or twice or more to Galaxy's Edge, right?
Yes.
So was there anything that you saw in the early concept art that was like kind of impressed you the way either it changed or how it was just what was in the concept art, like once you were in Galaxy's Edge?
Oh, just all across the board. One thing that I love that did not actually make it into the park, but the concept art like really just caught my eye immediately was this explorer shop that was going to be operated by Atrandoshan and like other proprietors. You probably never would see him, but it was like a space REI. And I'm a very like casual outdoor person. Like I like hiking. I like camping. I don't need that much, but you put me in an REI, I'm going to find at least 10 pieces of gear I must have to survive my two nights of car camping. So seeing the concept art for the Star Wars version of that, and I talked to, I believe, Rick Lim about designing and just kind of how they were imagining what the walls would be filled with and how they would kind of translate this idea of, if you were to go on like out into the wilds of Batu on expeditions, what would you need? And what would that look like in the context of Star Wars? Like that concept art, super cool, super cool. And it's not in the park, maybe one day, but what a fun idea. Like, and I just like knowing that they thought they just, in that blue sky phase, just throw it all out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of too, like, the scope of it, clearly. I just, like, because I just did get that access to a digital treasure trove of, I don't know, 700 pieces made in the book, over 700. There were probably thousands of images.
Oh.
And that was a lovely several afternoons, I feel like, just like clicking on next on my 13-inch laptop screen, which I later, I'm like, I need a second monitor. Yeah. I need to plug one in just for this book.
You've mentioned more than once now how many pieces there are. It blows my mind the pace at which artists on this level crank out stuff that is like the best thing I've ever seen. Everything they put on paper or on their yes. iPad is the best thing I've ever seen. Doug Chang talked about even, you know, Doug Chang, the living God that he is, talked about being intimidated by younger artists as well. I saw one of his talks, or he did a, it was sort of like a workshop on just how he does art. He created a droid like on the spot, you know, at Star Wars Celebration. And he talked about the younger artists that'll crank out like seven of these in a day, you know, seven entire scenes, you know, they'll block out a whole thing. And I don't understand how that's possible. Did you talk to any of the artists about that? Like the, how they managed to crank out that much? Because I'm sure Lucasfilm wants them to, you know, they want quality, but they also probably want a lot of quantity, right?
Something that came up a couple of times from Scott Trowbridge and from Chris Beatty at Imagineering and someone else too, they, multiple people referenced they'd be just having a meeting talking about ideas and Eric Timmons would be over there in the corner just sketching. And at the end, he'd be like this. And they're like, how did you pull? That's exactly what we wanted. And we just like, this has been 30 minutes. Like, what are yeah. you? So that was kind of the only context that came up in. But in talking, another one was Rick Lim. And he's an incredible concept artist. And he's based, or at least at the time of when he was working on Galaxy's Edge, which was years ago. And I was asking all these people, by the way, like, you remember that piece of art you created back in, I don't know, 2016? What was going through your head? Yeah. My memory doesn't work that way. Rick Lim, anyway, was working in Singapore at the time. So would talk about how he'd get notes overnight from Doug or Eric and like send back like a couple of pieces for them to look at. And they, you know, were just on opposite time schedules. And just by the sheer amount of, because I could, you know, some of the artists like would, they have signed their concept art in the bottom. Others, it's just in the, it was in the file names. And that's how I could tell who to credit. Yeah. So just by the sheer number of file names with R. Lim, and I forget what, they all had three initial like abbreviations. His might have just been Rick, R-I-C.
Right.
It's like, you did so much for this book. Like, it's just hard for me to wrap my head around. And his stuff certainly, you know, Eric did a lot of sketches, which are in the book, and rendered pieces as well. But Rick Lim's are largely like full color, digital, like gorgeous. I'm like, yeah. How do you do this? I mean, I know it's your job and you're a professional. Like, I understand, but also how?
One thing Doug Chang mentioned in that talk or that workshop was I guess the majority of the younger artists either are familiar with or primarily use 3D rendering, where Doug's just, you know, he's drawing digitally, but it's 2D. It's just, I mean, it might as well be paper and ink or paper and pencil. I would imagine that the 3D rendering process, once you know that software as well as you know Photoshop or anything else, really expedites the process. And really, you know, those tools, you pull in assets that you have. And did anyone talk about that process? The tools they were using?
I'm trying to think back. I don't think so. I feel like most folks were traditional. If anyone talked about process, it was Eric talking about doing his really rough, quick sketches, especially when they did research trips to Marrakesh or Casablanca, and how they took a million photographs, of course, but that he would sketch things as they went to capture. But I feel like, and I know it's probably not true, but I feel like most people, most artists used 2D digital.
Interesting.
I think Christian Alsman has some 3D rendered droids for Galaxy's Edge and for Star Cruiser.
Yeah.
But we didn't get into process too much.
I feel like, I think it's Women of the Galaxy. There was a bunch of artists used, right? For each, did you have a hand in picking them out, or was that more on the, like the publishing side or editor? I'm not sure how that works.
A little bit of all three, because cool. We had 18 artists, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And I was really grateful Lucasfilm kind of let, you know, we had, well, I should know the 75 characters, it's been a minute, that are in that book, and they kind of let artists keep their own individual style. Like, of course, like Padme's going to look like Padme, but they didn't like make anyone stay on a certain model, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I recommended some artists because I just, I know them from Instagram, and they either done maybe like the Star Wars Tops trading cards. So they've mm-hmm. kind of worked with Lucasfilm before, or they've done fan art. And we kind of all brought that. Like the assistant editor knew some artists. Lucasfilm recommended some artists, of course. So they all kind of all came together that way.
That's great. Speaking of that book too, it's mostly, I would say, you know, a page or so write up on the character. But then you have Leia and Rey who get, you know, two or three, you know, same thing Padme. Was there like a... Did you have trouble maybe even filling out one page for some of those characters? And then someone like Leia is like, how do I fit it in three pages?
Yes and yes. Because we included, you know, such a variety, and we stuck to the current canon universe. And we still cut out a handful of characters we just didn't fit in the book. But when you have someone like Cammie Marstrap, who has largely only appeared in deleted scenes and in the radio drama, a single page is kind of hard to fill out.
Yeah,
same with like Beru. Lars was another one that I'm like, well, she did have a story, and from a certain point of view, A New Hope. Mm-hmm. So I got some information there. And how many more? Maybe did that actor do interviews back in the day?
Yeah.
So it was a struggle. And then you get to like a Leia or an Ahsoka. And it was a real trick of that book anyway, not to just like be a Wikipedia summary.
Yeah.
Because that exists and that's great, and that wasn't the purpose of the book, but Leia's done a lot. Mm-hmm. And when you have a character like that who we've seen from teenage years and Princess of Alderaan to the sequel trilogy and goodness knows how many comics and books in between, it was, and I saved Leia for last.
Yeah,
I was like, it's Leia.
Especially with someone like her, it's like there, I mean, she might be the only character that literally everyone, if you like Star Wars, knows, but then there's so much more to her because of novels and comics and all that type of stuff. So you don't want the write-up to be Wikipedia, but it would be a good, like, if my mother read it, you know, she'd be like, oh, I think I learned, you know, four or five things about Leia instead of just the original trilogy.
Yeah, that's my hope. And I really wanted to, like, reference for the different characters, the novels and comics, too, because I love reading that stuff and the animated series. And it comes from a selfish place of, like, I want everyone to watch the animated series and read the novels and comics. So
yeah, that's kind of where we come from, right? Like we just covered the Clone Wars for 8 weeks straight, basically. And it's just about making people who listen to us, whether they're, you know, a novice or an expert Star Wars, like everyone, if you like it even a little bit, we open the door for a wider love of it. Cause I mean, we're not on the hater tip when it comes to Star Wars, you know. It's like we're here to be a positive force, and sadly, and that's just not how the internet works. That type of stuff doesn't get you clicks, but we're doing what we do here, and it's fun. But I mean, especially Women of the Galaxy, like that was my biggest takeaway when I was reading it. I was like, wow, like, you know, four or five paragraphs about, you know, Beru. I was like, that probably was tough. And then I was like, Leia, three pages is like not enough. How do you?
No.
Yeah.
How do you balance that?
Did you feel any pressure given the fact that we lost Carrie Fisher and we all knew, you know, the book came out and I'm sure you were writing it far enough in advance that no one had any idea what was going to happen in what would become The Rise of Skywalker. But did you feel any pressure to kind of, I don't know, fill in what you would think might be the kind of the untold bits?
Yeah, it was really... I kind of did that for Rey too, just because I turned in my first draft of the book, minus the Solo stuff and Star Wars Resistance, like the week that Last Jedi came out. So I kind of had like, all right, I need to see what Leia does in The Last Jedi. And is that right? Yeah, the book came out October 2018. So seeing The Last Jedi kind of helped me fill in, okay, this is where Leia is in this film. And you kind of have to, like, it is Carrie Fisher, and the book too was not just about the characters, but when I could bring it up and wait, it made sense to bring it up, like certainly with Carrie Fisher, the actors who played them or voiced them, and just someone like the tremendous impact they've had on fandom and on fans around the world, not just women, and people of all ages, you know? So that was another reason why I was like, the Leia one was last, because it's like, it's not just Leia, like it's Carrie Fisher and her legacy, and that's pretty big. So I really had to write it in kind of an open-ended way.
Yeah.
Because they certainly were not, no one was going to give me any kind of whatever they might have known then about Rise of Skywalker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I kind of had to leave it open-ended and just kind of be like, oh, she's going to keep fighting for the resistance and leaking in some way and really leaning into hope, even when it's all absolutely terrible. And there were like, I don't know, 20 of them left at the end of Last Jedi, you know? So, but that was daunting to say the least.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Cause she, I said this a million times on the podcast, she's such a maternal figure for me. And I think for so many Star Wars fans, for the franchise. And like you said, she's, you know, as known as any other character to anyone of any age, any interest in Star Wars or not. So she's like a figurehead, you know, and being gone now, I don't know. There aren't words to describe what she is for me and for everyone who cares about this universe.
Oh, and it was such a small thing, but we dedicated the book to her, which made me
that's great.
Really happy.
Yeah, I'm repeating myself to podcast listeners, but I'll say it since Amy's here. Like, in my adult life, Leia is my favorite Star Wars character. You know, growing up as a kid, you know, I was born 1980. Obviously, Luke Skywalker is going to be my guy. It was odd to me when Han Solo became the guy. I'm like, what do you mean? Luke's the guy, you know? And then like, as an adult, I'm just like, you know what? Every single male Skywalker has kind of, their path has been wobbly. Leia, straight through, you know, leader, powerful, got things done. And I'm in my adult life, I'm like, that's the Skywalker. Leia is my favorite.
Hell yeah.
Oh, I just have warm, fuzzy Leia feelings now.
I love you.
I know.
Speaking of, so I Love You, I Know, our favorites section, we had Amy prepare her five favorite Star Wars scenes or quotes of all time.
Or both.
Or both, yeah.
Yeah, mix and match.
So do you feel confidently enough to list these in reverse order to give us the number one at the end of the five?
Yes.
Awesome.
Okay, the fifth is a quote. If all you do is fight for your own life, then your own life is worth nothing. From the amazing Harrison Dula in Star Wars Rebels.
That's great. Tell us a little bit more about that.
It's great, the end. No, I really love Star Wars Rebels. And, you know, I think Hera, when she tells that to Ezra, who's just a baby Padawan trying to find his way and has been kind of, you know, not sheltered on Lothal because he's an orphan. Kid's been through some stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not what I was going to say, but doesn't really have this experience of the broader world and why they're doing what they're doing. So Hera, who's this, I think, just an incredible maternal figure in Star Wars, which there are some of, but not enough of, in my opinion.
Agreed.
And just to have her like sit down and explain that and just, you're like, that's, she's not BSing. Like, she's not like, that's just Hera. Like, that's what she believes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really beautiful and very applicable to life. Because if all you do is care about yourself, then I don't think that's super exciting or a nice way to live. So
not helpful for the whole.
And Ezra definitely someone who needed not only Kanan and like the Jedi father figure sense, but then he needed Hera also. You know, he needed that knowledge of it's not all going to be Jedi tricks, you know? It's going to have to be some thoughtfulness and leadership like Hera would provide.
Yeah, I just finished a rewatch of that recently, and
We almost went straight from 8 weeks of Clone Wars into 4 weeks of Rebels, and we were like,
let's take a break.
Let's take a break, because then it would have been straight into Bad Batch, and we were just like, let's do some other fun stuff.
Well, if you're down when we do Rebels, whichever is your favorite season, if you want to be a guest for a breakdown, we'd love to have you.
Yeah.
I would love that. Definitely love the last Rebels season. Yeah.
I definitely don't, as I say this, I definitely don't pit Clone Wars or Rebels against each other, but every now and then I'm just like, do I like Rebels more than Clone Wars? I think I might like Rebels more.
I still love Clone Wars more. And when Rebels started, I was very like, you're not Clone Wars. Like, yeah. I don't know. Then I was like, oh, well, I was wrong. You're a terrific show and I'm sorry.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's not, I'm never going to ask someone what they like more, but I just will have that thought to myself. And I'm just like, shut up, Nick. They're both awesome.
All right, Amy, what's your number four?
Number four is Never Tell Me the Odds by Han Solo. And that is because it's such a hallmark of his character to be that competent and that cocky and just full of swagger that's like, I'm just going to do this. I don't need you to sit here and tell me whether it's going to work. Mm-hmm. I just need to take action. And as someone who overthinks things quite a bit on all the time, like that quote speaks to me as far as like, no, just do the thing.
Yeah.
And don't like sit here and think about every possible outcome that could happen, because then you'll never do it. And also you don't know.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense. Then that speaks to me. So your interpretation of that really is like nailing me right in the spot of my brain that has OCD and ADHD all mixed together. It's just like, dude, just do it. Just shut the hell up and just do the thing.
Do the thing. I'm thinking about now the things that I should be doing that are on my list. I'm like, just do that thing. It's just,
yeah.
That's a later Amy problem.
All right, number three.
Number three is Qui-Gon, because Qui-Gon is my favorite Jedi.
Underrated.
Truly underrated. And man, I'm glad we got more of him in Master and Apprentice. But when he tells little Anakin, always remember your focus determines your reality. I know that's like a go-to popular quote, but I think it's kind of a good life motto.
Yeah.
Fits in that mindfulness area, I feel like.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Qui-Gon's like a walking, like nearly everything he says, I'm like just walking mindfulness lessons. So helpful for the Jedi mind. Thanks, Qui-Gon. But that particular just really stuck with me. And it's something like I think of not on a daily basis, but definitely a couple times a week when I'm just spiraling about something and probably being negative and be like, okay, are you bringing the negative? Like, is this a negative thing? Or are you just bringing your own baggage to it and putting that spin on it?
Right.
See the Qui-Gon.
That's so relevant right now in the world. It's... Yeah.
And just the word focus to me, it's like there's so much to be distracted with. And going to like what I said earlier about like really never having a schedule, it's like, well, it's just I get distracted easily because I don't have any like an end point to focus on a lot of days. So I'm just like, what? What's going on? Okay, I'll do this now.
All right. Number two, Star Wars quote or scene of all time.
Okay, this one's going to be a scene. And it is the Maul and Ahsoka showdown in the final Siege of Mandalore episode.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because specifically like when Maul tells her about what he's seen, and that came out long enough ago that it's not a spoiler anymore, right?
Yeah, we
and
just
you all
covered
just talked
it.
About Clone Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much that even if you say it right now, when someone gets to that point, they will have forgotten it. So
I relate to this. You know, when he talks to her about like, hey, I've said he's seen this vision and kind of warns her about Anakin and their conversation, their fight, like that's beautifully choreographed. Ugh. It's intense. And the music, because Kevin Kiner is amazing. That whole, it's up there. I mean, clearly I'm putting it like number two, like as far as being up there with film.
Yeah, totally.
Moments. And it's something I'm always like, just give the animated series a shot, please, everyone.
Yeah. It is, I mean, on your list, obviously, and I would say objectively, it's just some of the best Star Wars, period.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I have a quote, as a matter of fact, on the season 2 DVD of Star Wars Rebels.
Oh.
That says that.
Nice.
Some of the best Star Wars storytelling.
I mean, that's the other best animated scene to me, Ahsoka versus Vader.
Season Twilight 2, right? Of the Apprentice is, yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yep. Heavy stuff. All right, are you ready to tell the world your number one Star Wars scene or quote of all time?
The entire world. We have 7 billion listeners weekly.
Okay, they better be ready for this. No. So going back to quote, I'm going to a Yoda quote from The Last Jedi. The greatest teacher failure is.
Real reality.
Yes.
What a scene.
And I have that one on a message board, like by my desk, because I screw up. I don't know. We all do. We screw up all the time. And especially when it's bigger things, it's not fun. It's uncomfortable. But we all do it. And it's a good reminder that it's just part of being alive. And
yep.
You know better next time, maybe. And Plus, it's Yoda in The Last Jedi, and I think that scene with Luke is just one of the best things in the sequel trilogy. And I mean, I love The Last Jedi as a whole film, but that scene in particular, like, ugh, freaked out when I saw that in theaters.
Yeah, it was, I feel like when I'm anticipating new Star Wars, I'm anticipating that feeling. You know, like watching that scene, having it be like learning, having it be emotional, just an overall, like, that is what Star Wars is to me. And like, I try to not have my expectations too high, because then obviously, you know, in this day and age, your expectations being too high, ultimately you might get, you know, let down a little bit. But that's what I chase in Star Wars, is that feeling of that scene. It's just so, so good.
I'm just thinking about it and that I really want to watch Last Jedi again.
Well, let's do one more little thing if you're down.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of a lightning round.
Okay, I'm ready.
A major weapons test is imminent.
Test bay 94.
You may fire when ready.
All right, test bay 94. We do either ors, favorite things, and would you rather.
Okay.
Either or. Light side or dark side?
Light side.
No hesitation. Agreed.
I know where I stand. I have the tattoo to prove it. It's great.
What's your tattoo?
That one's Rebel Alliance tattoo.
Same.
Nice.
Got the same.
Oh, I have that too. I don't want to be left out. I also have that tattoo.
Me too. We haven't done this yet. Favorite Star Wars novel?
Lost Stars by Claudia Gray. I have to think about that one. Because there's so many good Star Wars novels, but that one was one of the early ones published, I feel like, in this new current storytelling universe. And it's a story that's kind of like a little, I love romance, first of all. And it's a YA novel that has like flavors of Romeo and Juliet with a girl and a boy who are teenagers. They grew up together on this kind of backwater planet. They both join the Empire. One of them defects, but then they're still like, have all their history and they still love each other, but now one's with the Empire and one's with the Rebellion, and it gets intense. And and Claudia Gray, like, she's a wonderful storyteller. I have not been let down by any of her Star Wars books yet, but that's my favorite, and I really want Disney Plus to please make it into a limited series.
Yeah, that sounds great. I have not read that yet. I think the only book I've finished, I'm definitely a slow reader, but Star Wars novels are the only novels I read, really. I don't know if that's good or bad for my life, but Bloodlines, I really loved. That was my favorite novel, Star Wars novel that I've read. And I actually just started Master and Apprentice, like literally just started it. I'm probably one chapter in, so I'm excited because I know she's great. And then Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan's going to make me real happy.
I'm excited for you. Yeah, you're going to go on a journey. It's going to be amazing.
All right, would you rather? This one comes from the Discord from our friend Johnny Amazich. Would you rather own a real-life lightsaber, but it only makes the Owen Wilson wow sound instead of the lightsaber sound, or have a real-life X-Wing, but you can only fly it for 5 minutes at a time?
Oh, that was a little tougher, but I'm going to go X-Wing because I feel like I'm way too clumsy and to be trusted with a real lightsaber that could cut off limbs or cut my house in half. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
So X-Wing with tiny flight times, which I also have a tattoo of.
Same.
An X-Wing. I love it.
With my Rebel Alliance symbol, I have two of them, like sparrows.
Oh, cool.
Nice. That's cool.
So X-Wings have hyperdrives, right?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Obviously. Okay. So wait a minute. I'm just trying to think. If you could drive it 5 minutes at a time, you could go pretty far.
That's
with a hyperdrive.
Yeah.
I actually did not think that through. I was just like, X-Wing. But now I'm even more on board with that option.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean you can only fly it for like 5 minutes a day. You could fly it for 5 minutes and sit in space for however long. You're required to wait before you can fly it for another 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And
I think that's clearly the better option.
Yeah.
My apologies to Owen Wilson.
Wow. All right. We usually wrap, when we have a guest, we usually wrap with a little, you know, a little guest segment, what are you doing right now, kind of plug your new stuff thing, but we talked a lot about your new stuff. So actually, here's a question. Do you I imagine as a writer, as a purist, you would prefer someone to go get a book in a bookstore and pick it up and have that experience. But do you also as a, a younger person, as like a non-boomer, have any preference on where someone buys your books?
I, of course, do love the bookstore experience, especially as a bookworm nerd. But there's this great website called bookshop.org. So you can order online, and it supports independent bookstores. And that's the main thing. I just want to support the, obviously buy the bookstore where you can buy them. I don't like, do what you got to do. Not everybody has access to an independent bookstore. A lot of people have Prime memberships and want to use them. I support it. But bookshop.org is great. And your local indie store, more stores than previous to the pandemic, more indie stores are doing online orders or pickup than they were in the past. So always good to check that out.
Awesome. One thing that we don't usually do when we have a guest is close with a quote, but we're going to this week.
Oh boy.
And this quote goes like this. Minds constantly measure everything against how we think things should be. But what is our source of this condition of should? Why that and not something else? Having preconceived ideas can block us from absorbing new information. That was written by none other than our guest, Amy Ratcliffe,
beep, beep, beep.
In Star Wars Jedi Mind, Secrets from the Force for Balance and Peace.
Nice. It did take me a second. I was like, that sounds familiar. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. As a science nerd and a skeptic and a critical thinker that speaks to me on that level, and also just as a person who's trying to be a better person as I grow, it speaks to me. It's great stuff. Well done.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's really nice to hear.
I mean, all of your books make great gifts, but if you're in a bind, you know, that Jedi Mind's a nice little book. Make a good little gift for a stocking stuffer or something like that. I highly recommend that one. Especially someone like I've only really started to practice mindfulness in the last, you know, year or so. We had James Arnold Taylor on, and he's someone who practices mindfulness too. So I feel that there's obviously, you wrote a book about it called The Jedi Mind. There's a lot of parallels of being a Jedi and being mindful and all that. So it's really cool and will make you love Star Wars even more and just be like, my calmness is a Jedi trait.
I love that. I was like, oh, why didn't I put that in the book? Thank you both for kind words. I'm really proud of that one. My favorite book to write, actually, that I've written.
Great.
Sweet. Well, if people want to find you on social media, where can they find you?
Folks can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Amy_geek.
Appropriate and easy to remember.
Yes. Much easier to remember than my last name. So just stick with that 2009 decision forever.
For listeners looking for the podcast on social media, you can find us on Instagram at ThankTheMakerPod, on Twitter at ThankTheMaker. Fun fact, at least half of the listeners of this podcast are not subscribed. So if you're one of those people, press subscribe in your podcast app of choice. And if you have questions for the podcast, you can hit us up on social media for the shorter ones. But if you want to ask us longer things or be involved in AMAs or get access to our Discord server and do other cool things that we have coming up, this week on the after show segment, we're talking about an idea that we have for future episodes, some future fun stuff to do with patrons. To get access to all of it, patreon.com/thankthemakerpod is the place for that. And all of my stuff is at Adam the Skull.
And all my stuff is at Nick Bayside. Definitely follow me. By the time the next podcast drops, I will have been in Galaxy's Edge on May the 4th. So definitely follow me and watch me. Have fun,
so jealous.
And cry and have more fun and a couple of beers probably.
And also we have new merch at thanktomakermerch.com.
Oh yeah.
We have a new shirt that I'm so pumped about. Amy, are you familiar with the campaign to investigate #investigateEndor?
I am not. I am intrigued.
We started talking about this when we did the Return of the Jedi episode, I don't know, sometime early last year. You ever wonder how the Ewoks had a woman's dress that just happened to fit Leia just laying around in a village full of tiny little bears?
It is pretty suspect.
Yeah, they ate that lady. That's where that dress came from.
They are murder bears. So.
Yeah, they're murder bears. Yeah. Yes. So there's been a meme going around. It's the Bert and Ernie meme where one of them's talking, the other's laying with his eyes open like, oh my God. And it has gone viral in the past like week. And we just happened to have a merch design lined up that we'd been dragging our feet and putting out. So now it's out because the world is asking, where'd that dress come from? So.
What really happened?
Well, maybe you could get a short story in A Certain Point of View, Return of the Jedi, and you could write that story.
Yes.
Yes. I love this. But true crime style. Yes, how I would do.
I listened to a whole season of Serial about that. If there was a Star Wars version,
100%. Yes,
I love that.
Talk to the folks and make it happen.
I will call up my friend. You can't even say George Lucas anymore because he doesn't. But you know what I mean.
Call up Kathy and make some moves.
On it.
All right. Well, Amy, again, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you all. This was really fun. Thanks for having me.
Everybody, thanks for listening. And until next time, may the Force be with you.